Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Buzzed Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we are going to be covering more Julia Quinn books. We're binging books again. And this time is the Duke of Wyndham series and the Agents of the Crown series.
And if you're wondering, so we really did not place some of these others like in the whole Bridgerton universe, like the last set that we did, Bevelstoke series. Those, I think we had an idea of where they fit from a timeline perspective. And I think if I am correct about it, because it's kind of an, at least the last Bevelstoke book, if I remember correctly, my thinking was that it is in between, say, Benedict's book
and Colin and Penelope's book.
Yeah. Because, you know, there's an 8-year stretch in there. And, you know, there's a mention of Gareth, you know, kind of in passing, those kinds of things. So these books, as far as I can tell, are going to be probably, and these are hard to place for me, honestly.
It's definitely before Hyacinth's book.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Not entirely sure.
Not entirely sure where these fit. The Agents of the Crown books are a lot harder to place for me. What did they call the other ones?
The Wyndham, the Duke of Wyndham.
Yeah. The Wyndham series. Those I think are going to be before even Daphne's book. I think the way it's placed, because the hero of the last of those books is the nephew rather than grandson of Lady Danbury, I think.
No, that's in the Agent of the Crown series, Mom.
Okay. But there's still going to be a generation like ahead of where Hyacinth and Gareth.
Yeah, so definitely before then, but that's all we really know. Okay, so what are we drinking?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, we have disclaimers and caveats and stuff like that. Most people probably have not read these books, so everything is going to be a spoiler. We are going to have cursing, for sure. And I am having a mocktail of my own invention, though probably is a variation on something from the Regency Book of Drinks. It is pink grapefruit juice, a little bit of lime juice and tonic water. I've got to get rid of this diet tonic water, because diet tonic water is not worth drinking. Much like diet anything, in my opinion, is not worth drinking. So, but that is what I'm having. It's not that bad, although it would be better with regular tonic water. What are you having to drink?
I'm having some cheap champagne that my friend brought to a game night last night. If I sound a bit hoarse, that's because it was game night last night. And it's Cook's. It's
is cheap champagne for sure.
We're in college, Mom. You can't. Anyway, so let's get into the rankings. So what we do for all of these book rankings for these Julia Quinn ones, it will not be applicable when we get to Jane Austen, because there are no sex scenes, unfortunately, for us. That's why we read this stuff. Anyway, so we're going to be ranking the books. There are 4 of them in this go around: the duologies of the Duke of Wyndham's and the Agent of the Crown series. They're both 2 books. And then we're going to rank the couples, then we're going to rank the female characters, the male characters, and sex scenes.
Yeah.
So do you want to, you do the odd ones, I'll do the even ones.
Yeah.
What is your number one story?
My number one story of these stories, and it is a close call for me. I'm giving it right now to How to Marry a Marquess.
Interesting.
As number one, but it is a close call with my second one. And
okay.
Just to give my reasons for it, I like both characters. Both leads, I think, are strong. She gets a little stupid right at the end, which I find annoying.
Yeah.
For the most part, I really like her, Elizabeth, who is the heroine in that book. I think that their story is plausible. Especially the meddling by Lady Danbury, who I love anyway.
Who has a cat named Malcolm.
Yeah, and the cat's awesome. But I, you know, so I really, there are a lot of things I like about the book. I like the secondary characters. There are some negatives to it, but I still, right now, I'm going to put that as first of the four. How about you?
Okay, so my number one is To Catch an Heiress. I know, Mom, I know. So here's the reason why. I know it's not your kind of book, but I liked I think it was because I read it really quickly. But I went through this in maybe like a day and a half or something like that. I read it very, very fast. I just like both characters a lot, and I think they make some stupid decisions, but who doesn't in these books? But I think that both characters are super strong, especially Caroline. I really like her. I like her, like, trying to get, Mom, don't make that face at me. I like her trying to get out of her circumstances. She's an heiress waiting for her fortune to come through on her 21st birthday. And she tries to run away from, she has like a really tragic backstory, a la like Sophie and Anne from the other series. And it's just been one guardianship that's been awful after another, and she's trying to get out of a bad situation. She gets mistaken by Blake, who makes a really stupid choice, but by Blake, the love interest, who thinks that she is Carlotta something or other, and he thinks that she's a spy, a Napoleonic spy, and he kidnaps her, but she's kind of like okay with it because she wants to get away. So there's this whole like thing about her not telling him who she is so that she buys more time, that whole thing. But I think what I like the most are the characters. Like, I really love James, who is the lead of the other book in that book, because he's a voice of reason and just being like, you guys just need to get together. You need to stop being stupid. Blake, who I'll talk about later, has like a similar backstory as like Francesca. He has a very sad, depressing backstory. And so yeah, I think there are valid reasons why they don't immediately get together. There are some weird things, but I think it was just more entertaining. I think the thing that shocked, how about this? I think the reason I put it up this high is because it shocked me at the end by people dying. Like, I was surprised that Julia Quinn actually killed people in her books, because that doesn't usually happen. And so like, there's a hostage situation at the end where like these like people who are like,
so there are actual stakes, and you're like,
yeah, there were actual stakes. And like, oh, well, everyone's like holding up pistols at each other's heads like all the time in these books, especially these series. But they actually will shoot you. And I like that they raise the stakes more. And I think I just found that more entertaining. And yeah, I could see why they didn't get together immediately. But there are some stupid things in it. But I liked it. I don't know what to tell you. I liked it.
I'm trying to figure out how to respond to that, and I'm not sure if, because I think we're gonna have very different rankings.
Yeah, we will. I'll go with my number two next, and you'll just talk about it when you get to it on your ranking, which I now know is very low. So my number two is How to Marry a Marquess. I think the reason it's not my number one is because of the stupid shit at the end, because I was really, really enjoying it up until the point where she finds out he is an actual Marquis and she starts freaking out on him, and I was just like, okay, girl, come on, like, this can only benefit you. And like, I don't know, I think that she was just way too prideful for me in that way. Like, I can understand her wanting a little bit of dignity in that, but she just was acting so dumb.
and persists in it. Like, yes. It's just really fucking stupid.
To put in perspective, her family is poor because her parents died and they had debts and stuff like that. So she works for Lady Danbury. She has to look after her three younger siblings. And they're running low on money, and she decides she needs to marry. She finds this random book in Lady Danbury's library. It's called How to Marry a Marquess. Oh, look. And it's like a how-to guide about like how to properly make yourself desirable to a marquess or someone of a higher station so that you can marry. And she tries following the book, and little does she know that that James is Lady Danbury's nephew. he comes to town, and Lady Danbury is like, hey, there's this blackmail plot against me. I need you to go undercover and figure out what's going on. I think another reason why I didn't really like the ending of this book was just like, oh, I made that up. There was no intrigue there. Don't worry about it. It was fine.
See that coming from a mile
Oh,
away.
I absolutely saw it coming from a mile away. It was not harped on at all, but it also didn't make there be any stakes to what's going on. So, like, his existence in the book was just wandering around and being like, oh, she's hot. And so I'm just like, well, that's fine. But it didn't really make anything high stakes for me, especially after this was the last book I read because it was just the way I read the books. But after the huge raised stakes of the last book and then coming to this and him being like a very well-trained guy, like as somebody who works for the War Department as a spy or formerly did, I just was expecting more. But it's fine that it was kind of more like domestic bliss kind of thing, but it was just kind of like, I don't know, it was just a bit more boring to me. Like he didn't really have much to do in the story other than, oh, well, I guess I'll help her find a husband. Oh, wait, I don't want her to find a husband other than me.
I
But
really liked him though. I mean, I like his character, and I like, him. There's an honorableness with him. We'll talk about that when we talk about guys. But
yeah.
bottom line, I don't necessarily mean to argue all of these. I guess I will do it at whatever time that I do it. But I do see many of these characters quite differently from you do.
Well, I think another thing is that I really loved James in the last book, and he was
I
very,
still
very
love
funny
James.
to me.
I love James.
I love James in the last book, and so I was just a little bit disappointed with how he just kind of was. It felt like he was more sidelined, and Elizabeth had more of a plot going on than he did because the blackmail plot was absolutely nothing at all, and so. I mean, like, I
His
figured.
primary plot was basically trying to, help her and then not trying to help her, find it.
Yeah.
Like basically being the counter to How to Marry a Marquis, the book.
Yeah.
And that to me was like the entirety of the plot for him, other than you did get some backstory with him, dealing with how his mother was killed. And
Yeah. They both have really
he's so
tragic
protective
backstories.
of her. I love how that. And is a lot more plausible to me than some of these others.
Yeah, maybe this is number one because I think that there are fewer stupid decisions in this one compared to the other one. But I would still say that. Okay, I'm switching How to Marry a Marquis to number one, but I would, but I'm still saying that To Catch an Heiress is my number two because I think I found it very entertaining and I thought it was very action packed and I wanted that out of this because the other two books were very boring to me. And I, well, not very boring, but we'll talk about it. But it's, yeah. So How to Marry a Marquis is probably number one. I like Lady Danbury a lot. And the cat was iconic. I love that she has a cat.
I love Malcolm the cat. Malcolm is awesome.
I also love the inclusion of Blake and Caroline in the story of them kind of playing the role that James did last in the last book and them just being like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Just get together. What are you doing? But again, I think there's again, pride is certainly a motivating factor for Elizabeth, but I still think that her like reaction to it was really stupid to me. I can see her feeling betrayed, but it felt a little bit over the top for me.
So in and it's been a while since I've read these. So just to give this some context, I read them probably in the same order that you did. I read The Lost Duke, then Mr. Cavendish, I presume, and then To Catch an Heiress, and then How to Marry a Marquis.
Yes.
And I finished How to Marry a Marquis maybe 5, 6 days ago, and I started another book, and we've been on vacation and some other stuff. So my recollection of some of these previous books may not be as accurate.
Yeah.
I will say, and I'm going to tell you right up front, To Catch an Heiress is not my number two, in part because I hate Caroline. So, and I will tell you, and you will understand what I'm saying. She reminds me a lot of some people that I know very, very well, and it makes me crazy. And
Okay.
so I it that the characteristics that come to the fore with her, where she will not shut the fuck up. It is just very, very frustrating to me in the character. And so I don't love her. And for that reason, I'm not going to love the story, because a lot of it is dependent upon, I think, really liking her. I had as my second, and again, I don't know that I'm feeling adamant about this, but my second was Mr. Cavendish, I presume. And the reason for it, I really like Amelia.
I really love Amelia.
Yeah. Thomas's dick.
We'll talk about Thomas.
Thomas has issues. Now, he is not the biggest dick in all of this group, but he's a dick, and he's got a problem. And I find him, he is so honorable to a fault. It's like, you, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Oh, it gets so annoying.
But at the same time, I think she's really pretty great. Now, again, the storyline, I don't know, there was some, I guess I, on some level, kind of identified with her, like, you know, like she's sticking it out a little bit in a way that I kind of find incredible. And it may be that To Catch an Heiress is a better book. I think what, and I want to say this as an overall for these four books, and I think it's going to be true for, like, really anything that gets too far beyond the Bridgerton universe as far as these extra books, Bellastoke, all of that. You see the kind of patchwork nature of how they're written. Like, you get the sense that, like, a vignette was written, they aren't really sure where they want to put it in the plot, so they, like, add a couple transitional sentences and hope that you don't notice that there's, like, continuity.
That's definitely true.
And there are some real significant continuity problems. Like, even within a scene, you're like, they're not talking about, oh, and then he put her on the bed, and then, you know, like, a page or two later, they were still standing and they fell to the bed. It's like, no.
Yeah, no, I noticed a few of those.
Did no one catch this? You have, well, editors.
Even within within a conversation, I was noticing this with the new book that we're reading right now, of, like, they will just be having a conversation, which is, again, very normal. And then there's, like, this one sentence, and then complete U-turn with the next statement, yeah, from one of them, and I'm just like, where did this come from? And no one's addressing that was a big U-turn. Yeah. Like, where did all of this come from? I also think in general these guys are so horny. Like, I not to say that the Bridgerton guys are not horny, they absolutely are, but they're like Daniel levels of horny all the fucking time, and it is constant that they're not really falling in love with their brains or with whatever, or like with their personalities, or like just who they are as people. A lot of the times they're just falling in love with them, or not, just lusting after them. And it's very, very true in my last pick, and I will talk about it, but it just,
your last is probably my last. I think
it absolutely is, and we know which one it is. Yeah. So
Mr. Cavendish, I presume, I liked, and I think part of what I liked about this is that the setup for the relationship between Amelia and Thomas, who are the leads in this book, is kind of shadowed in the very first book, in The Lost Duke. And the fact that you get this development of their characters who you saw but didn't get to know in the previous book, I think that helped a lot. I feel like they're both more noble type of characters. I think that they are people that, you know, they have character arcs. Like, they go from, hey, this is what I always thought I was going to be, to, hey, this is what I want to be. And I like that about both of them. I think both of them have that kind of character growth, and I liked that about them. There's some good sex scenes, whatever. But there's some bad sex scenes too.
Oh yeah.
But there are, I think there's a lot more character growth in this, and I like that about Mr. Cavendish, I presume. So that's why.
That's your number two. I would also like to say, for perspective, the Duke of Wyndham series, it starts with The Lost Duke of Wyndham, which you see from Grace and Jack's perspective, and they have this, like, sequence of events that you see from a certain perspective, from their perspective. And then the next one, which is Mr. Cavendish, I presume, happens from Amelia and Thomas's perspective. So it's the same events, essentially, with like a few extras, like before and after. But essentially, you're just seeing something from a different perspective, which I think is an interesting idea. But it also, when they rehash the exact same scene and nothing's really, you already got the idea from the last book and you're reading it, it's just kind of boring. But I'll talk about that whenever I get to those. So what's your number three?
My number three is To Catch an Heiress. And the reason it is my number three, I do like, especially the side characters. I think the side characters in this book are really,
I love the servants. They're so fucking funny to me.
Hilarious and passive aggressive. Holy shit.
So passive aggressive.
So impressive.
I love them so much.
And you know, there are a lot of good side characters in this book. There are things I like about the whole kidnapping plot and that kind of thing. Some of it's implausible, but there are a lot of things I do like about that overall plot. My issue with it, and I mentioned this, I don't like Caroline. I will try to describe this. No, number one, she, and I probably should describe it more when we're talking about heroines. There are from a couple or a book perspective, there are things that bother me about this. There's no explanation about their attraction. I think, you know, you talk about these guys are just so horny. It's like all sex all the time. There's a lot of juvenile bullshit between the two of them.
I liked some of their banter. I'm sorry.
I wanted to slap the shit out of both of them a lot.
Well, I feel like we're having different perspectives over the book we're reading right now. So, well, it's
yeah. Similar to me. There are going to be some issues that are going to come up when we talk about couples and personalities. But I do like the side characters. I think the sex scenes are pretty good. I will talk about the other things in other sections.
So yeah.
Number three.
My number three is Mr. Cavendish, I presume. I really love Amelia. She's so fucking awesome. Yeah, I think she's really cool. And I think, I like you said, the beginning of their, like, just this central conceit of their, like, of their relationship of like it being an arranged marriage and he's been putting it off and all that stuff. And then this curveball being thrown in of, oh, he's potentially not even the Duke of Wyndham, spoiler. Yeah. And this whole thing throwing everybody's life off balance. But I like that they show a little bit, I wish they showed a little bit more of how they were before and maybe them getting to know each other a little bit before then.
They do show a little bit, but it was
very, very quick. But yeah, I love that this is a book about Amelia just taking back her agency in this relationship and being like, well, you're dragging your fucking feet and you're being an absolute dickhead to me. I deserve better. And I'm going to make you like see who I am. And I'm going to make some decisions for the first time in my life. And it's especially since we'll talk about Amelia later, but yeah, she has some backstory with her father and stuff like that. But I also love some of the side characters, like the innkeeper, who's his best friend, just being like, oh yeah, he's a drunk idiot. And I'm just like, I love that.
It makes you like him a lot more and you need that perspective for him.
I wrote down a few quotes that I wrote down. I didn't write down quotes for many of them, but I did write some of these. One of them that kind of really struck me, which even in context, it's a little bit weirder, but I really liked this, of him that at one point, Thomas says, you'll make a spectacular duchess, when he's trying to like pawn her off to Jack. You'll make a spectacular duchess. My only regret is you were never mine. That killed me. But yeah. Then the next one of Amelia saying, I love you, I have to go. That's so funny. And then her during one of the sex scenes goes, it's done, now make it good. Like I love her so much.
She's great.
I think another thing that Holt, and I'll talk about this more when we talk about couples, but there's so much shit about Grace in this, of like Thomas lusting after Grace because he's confused about his feelings for Amelia, and then being
lust after. He, I don't think he lusts after her at all.
He kisses her and considers marrying her mother.
What he's doing is this is my perception of it. Is like he's like, well, I can't have a woman of Amelia's stature, so let's see if I can make it work with this other person who I actually, you know, I know pretty well and like. I mean, maybe we could make this work. And I think what he's doing is testing to see if there's any chemistry, and there isn't. He's not lusting after her. He's not.
I don't like that he tested anything, and it sure. Kind of cheapens them getting together for me in a way, because it's kind of like, oh, well, you can have Amelia, Jack. I'm going to go see if Grace will work. Nope, that doesn't work. I guess I'll take your scraps.
So what it is that he is someone who has disciplined himself to not have emotion about anything. He does what he thinks is his duty on every level, and he forces it even when he doesn't want to.
It's dumb.
I'm not saying that there is a logic to it that I understand, though.
Sure.
And the logic being that I can't have her because I'm not of her station anymore. So I've got to change, you know, like, you know, logically I should be with someone of Grace's station, so I should try to make that work. And it's like, and he's trying to force it, and even when he tries to force it, he's like, you know, but then he's just like having to resign himself to, I'm just gonna be miserable, and I don't care what Amelia wants, because I have to like save her from he has issues.
Definitely. So many issues, and yeah. It pisses me off, but I mean, it just, it's some of the worst traits in like the Bridgerton men, of their like pride, kind of like Antony and Simon being like, but I can't be happy because I can't. And that's it. And it's just like, it's not like there's a woman right here who loves me. Oh, I can't be happy. It's stupid. And it really pisses me off. And Thomas just generally pisses me off. And I'll talk about him later, but him just completely disregarding Amelia for half of the book really pisses me off.
Yeah.
Even though Amelia is doing all these things for him and trying to be accommodating for this awful circumstance that they're both in, of like, maybe she's going, because on the marriage certificate, or like the betrothal certificate that they made when they were children, it was just for the Duke with the title. And so she can just be pawned off to the next guy, even though they kind of figure out a loophole in that. But it's just poor Amelia. Amelia has a rough ride, and she's just trying to like have some good things in her life. But no. Anyway, yeah, that's my number three. So my number four is The Lost Duke of Wyndham. Surprise, surprise. That's Grace and Jack's book. Yeah, it starts off so weird, because it's just odd, because like Jack is not a privateer. He's not on the water. He's a lot less cool. He's just kind of like a vagabond trying to steal from carriages on a dusty
highwayman.
That's the word. And he apparently is the long lost Duke. I would just like to say the Dowager Duchess is so unlikable. I do not want her in any book ever. She is so annoying.
She's horrible. She's horrible.
Horrible to everyone, especially Grace, who is her companion. It's a very interesting juxtaposition, since we're doing these duologies, like seeing how like Lady Danbury treats her companion compared to how this Dowager Duchess treats hers. It's night and day. But it dawdles. There's like a weird lust triangle with Thomas that people are confused about at the time, because they don't know what Thomas is thinking.
Because he doesn't say anything.
And it's, I know.
But you have to think about this from his perspective too. Like, his dad was horrible, and this is his grandmother that he has to deal with, is this horrible Duchess. And so you kind of have to have a little sympathy for him.
Sure. But he eventually gives her a cottage and allowance to have her get to quit her job, which I don't know why he didn't do this before, but okay. You saw she was suffering for what, like 5 years?
But he needed to have a companion for his grandmother.
That's true. Now he doesn't care.
Yeah, not my problem. Bye.
Yeah, stuff just kind of happens. I think the trip to Ireland and like figuring out if the merit, if he's a legitimate son and the long lost Duke, truly, that when they go on a trip to Ireland to ratify the marriage between his parents, I think that should have been halfway through.
Jack's parents is what you're talking about.
Yes, Jack's parents, not Thomas's. Jack's mm-hmm. parents. I think that should have been halfway through. Because they need to get to know each other, and they barely do. They never really get to know each other other than I like maps.
Well, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Did you have other stuff to say? Because I have a couple of comments about this.
There's a part at the end where Jack tries to destroy the evidence of his parents' wedding just because he doesn't think he can do it. He's also randomly dyslexic. Okay. That was never mentioned.
Dyslexic. He's illiterate.
Illiterate, sorry. But he's also dyslexic, I thought.
I think in the end he is, but he's not, you know, even in, Grace is not able to teach him to read in the end. She ends up reading all this stuff even when he becomes the Duke. So he is illiterate completely.
Yeah, but he tries to destroy the evidence of his parents' marriage, but Thomas is there and he confirms that he was a witness and he saw that it was real, and Jack just ends up being the Duke.
Yeah, I mean, totally implausible story. Keep going.
No, that's about it for the story I had. It was just very, it just dawdles and it takes a while to get wherever it needs to be. The overall plot of like there being a long lost Duke and them trying to figure it out is like, just the idea of it isn't bad, but then the actual actions that people take, and it takes a while for them to take them, it's just a little bit annoying and boring. And then you get Jack and Grace, who are just constantly lusting after each other, but that's about it. Like, they don't really get to know each other at all. And like, we're supposed to be like, oh, poor Grace, like that really sucks for her position. And it does suck, but like, we don't really learn much about her. Like, we don't learn really anything other than she, like, what did I write down? I think she has a similar to Cecilia's backstory, but she, because like her cousin tries to swoop in and like marry her and she was like, nah, and that whole thing. But it just is long, it's kind of boring, and it feels like it's more of a setup for the next book than anything else. But the
right.
next book just repeats a lot of plot points that I didn't need repeated.
Okay, so for me, obviously this is my number four as well in this group. I think this reinforces our previous speculation that if the kissing is too early in the book's going to suck. And that
to a certain degree.
Yeah, and that happened here. I mean, there's like kissing in the first chapter. It's like, no.
And it's under weird circumstances. It was like an Anne and Daniel kiss. Like, it was weird.
Yes. Yeah, it was fucking weird. And, you know, what ends up happening with the book, and I will talk about it probably in other sections when we talk about this, it is implausible, the attraction. I felt like, and when you look at these books online, the, you know, Lost Duke of Wyndham series or whatever, that this is the first book, I think is stupid, because the second book's so much better. Like, after reading this book, I was like, I'm not even sure I want to read that other book. You know, because the story just seems kind of dumb. But the second book's actually pretty good. So it's kind of like, or maybe by comparison, the second book's pretty good because the first one's just not.
Yeah,
I
think it's by comparison.
I don't know, but the bottom line is that this is not a great story, and it's an interesting choice to make it first. Mm. So let's move on to what do we do next? Couples?
Couples, yes. Who's your number one?
Oh, number one. Yeah,
I think I can guess.
I think you can guess too. It's gonna be Elizabeth and James.
Yeah, I also have Elizabeth and James as well.
Yeah, I really love them together. There is a lot of chemistry between them, and it's plausible chemistry. You get to see character development, you get to see banter, you get to, you know, hear their mental descriptions of each other, like, you know, they're handsome or they're dressed like this or they, you know, do whatever. The fact that they think about each other and how they think about each other, you get some backstory for both of them. Both of them kind of have these sad family backstories. You understand why they work together. And of course, you also understand why Lady Danbury sang them up and why they both care for her so much. Mm-hmm. So I felt like they were three-dimensional characters. I liked their attraction. I liked the sex they have. There's not enough of it, but I liked it. There's a lot of foreplay-ish stuff that happens. Mm-hmm. And I think all of that is quite good. But yeah, that's pretty much my number one.
Yeah, they're also my number one. They make each other's acquaintance for very separate reasons. Like, he suspects her of the blackmail and then immediately is like, nah, she's not that kind of person. And she is trying to practice the How to Marry a Marquis book on him, which is hilarious. And she fails miserably.
She thinks he's a land agent. She doesn't know he is gentry at all.
And so I really love how James just wants her to be who she is. And if she were to try to change, like How to Marry a Marquis is trying to get her to change, it would take away the best parts of herself that would be very sad. He doesn't want that spark to die out. And I think that's very sweet. They have a mutual respect for each other, which I appreciate. That's not true for every couple on this list. And they feel really bad for using or suspecting each other. Like, they do, once they get to know each other, it gets a little bit like, they're like, oh God, I cannot believe I suspected her. That's so sad. And he's trying to help her find a husband for a minute. And they want to just be loved for who they are. He wants to be loved for who he is and not just his money. She wants to find marriage, but she also always wanted to marry for love. So it's just a constant struggle with them to like figure that out. Also, and I will talk about their tragic backstories a little bit more, but just in general, the fact that they share their tragic backstories with each other in a moment of vulnerability, I think that shows them being very open to each other, which I really admired. I really liked that they shared deeper parts of themselves than just their glossy veneer, which I appreciated, and again is not true of everyone in this book series, in this ranking. That's my number one. My number two is Caroline and Blake. I know you don't agree, but I really like that they fight for each other. I like that they, how do I describe it? So yes, it does begin with a kidnapping, but unlike Andrew and Poppy, this is a little bit less bad, I guess, because it's kind of like an acceptable kidnapping on her part of like, oh well, I need to get away anyway, this is actually the perfect excuse, and him just being like, aha, I got her, he's such an idiot, I love him so much, but he really is dumb.
I will say up front, I like him better than her.
Oh, I love Blake. Blake is very funny to me. He's like, I've done it. I'm so good at my job. And he just completely failed. But and he thinks that he's so smart. It's just so funny to me. But again, he has a really tragic backstory that he slowly unfolds to her, and like other people slowly unfold to her. It's kind of like a Beauty and the Beast situation, as wherein like she goes willingly to this castle. I know everyone's trying to make Beauty and the Beast sound like it's Stockholm Syndrome. She could have left anytime she wanted. But, and that's proven in the movie. Regardless, not talking about that. But she gets to know the household staff and they love her. And they only do good things when she is near, like even giving good food. It's very funny.
Linear Mrs. Potts.
Very, very similar. But her spirit and her like free spirit, her free-spiritedness reminds him of his dead fiance, and so that's what kind of like keeps them from taking it to the next level, even though they do a lot of other stuff, and then like either she stops or he stops. I think he doesn't stop the, again, like I said earlier, all these men are so horny, it is insane. Yeah. Like, I think that there are moments that make no sense, and I'll talk about them in the sex scenes, but like it just, some of the sex scenes don't really make sense to me. Like, there are some that make a lot of sense, but like,
Oh, there is random like morning attempts to have sex with her that make no fucking sense at all in
we'll
that movie.
talk about it later. But I think that they're funny when they argue like a married couple. I know you don't like the childish banter, but I think that it wasn't too annoying. And I think just in general, I would have put them here anyway, because I think the other two couples have a lot of deeper problems than these two do. But he hesitates in even proposing to her, even though like his sister comes to his house and realizes that they've technically compromised her just by being in the same house as her for this long unaccompanied. And so it gets to the point where James is like, I'll fucking marry her if you don't, and you know that will make you upset, and so you need to put on your big boy pants and you need to go and fucking propose to her, because he loves her and she loves him, and he's the one dragging his feet, and it's stupid. But again, this is why they're number two. But but just in general, I think that them fighting for each other and like them keeping each other safe and keeping their secrets and stuff like that, it shows a lot of trust. And he doesn't trust her as much as she trusts him, but it's they're constantly trying to help each other, which I like. So
Yeah, they're not my number two.
okay, I figured.
Yeah, my number two is going to be Amelia Thomas.
Really?
Yeah, and I know you don't like Thomas. I like him. I know, and you know, people like all four, both Caroline and Blake. You don't realize. So what I'm reacting to with Caroline involves your Aunt Mary.
I figured.
The cadence of her speech, the
I'm sorry I didn't live with your sister. I don't have the background.
I'm not, there is a lot of non sequitur. I've got to be the funniest. I've got to be the smartest. I got to talk over you. That kind of stuff that I find really annoying with her. And she talks so much that she and never gets to the point, and doesn't tell Blake stuff he needs to know, or and so oh, I must go and do whatever.
We're talking
There's
about Amelia and Thomas. Talk about the Caroline and Blake when you get to them.
okay. So Amelia and Thomas, I first of all, we've mentioned that I really, really love Amelia. I think that she is someone who has been sidelined for most of her life and finally has said fuck it. Which I think, is not an uncommon thing for a lot of women. You get into this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to, show up and behave and, wear the right clothes and do the right things. And it's not getting me anywhere. What is the fucking point of all of this shit, right? But the thing I like about Thomas, and I know that this is probably a sticking point for you, and I get it. He doesn't like the things he is obliged to do, like one of them being he's supposed to marry Amelia, he's been betrothed to her, he is supposed to marry her, supposed to care about her, he's supposed to get to know her. And he doesn't know how to do that with humans. He was an only child, he had a terrible, his mother died when he was young. His dad was just awful. His grandmother is worse. He doesn't have relationships with people. He doesn't know how to have relationships with people other than a couple of guys, one guy he knew growing up who ends up being the innkeeper. Aside from that, I mean, he actually is a very good landlord. I mean, he's good at being the Duke. He has learned what he needs to know, and he just doesn't even want to be around where he where around his family at all. So he doesn't know what a normal familial relationship should be.
Neither does she.
Well, but she's got a better, she's got siblings, she's
Oh yeah,
got,
she has five sisters, like Elizabeth Bennet.
yeah, I mean she has a much better concept of what a family should be than he does. And I don't, and because they never speak to each other, they never had an opportunity until this whole situation comes up to get to know each other. And And what for him to get to know himself. And I think that that's what I like about them in this book is that they have to get to know themselves in order to become a couple. And you know, she's willing to give up, you know, the title and the bullshit and whatever. He is willing to, you know, make a go of it with her and you know, give her the life that she deserves and work at it, and it all turns out right in the end. But I think that he is actually a really good and honorable guy, and I like that about him. I think that again, a lot of times guys don't know themselves. I will reiterate, you know, people who are like this that would, oh, I can't do that because I'm not supposed to do it. I can't love you because I'm not supposed to love you. Or I will marry you because I'm supposed to, but not, I'm never going to get to know that I love you kind of thing. And I think that that's what I see with Thomas. And I like the fact that he's forced out of it.
Okay. Well, who's your number three?
My number three is going to be Caroline and Blake. And
Okay.
again, it's because I like Blake a lot more than Caroline. I don't hate Caroline. She annoys me, and they are both very, very childish. So what I wrote down is like there is no attraction. There's no explanation of the attraction between them before the kiss. There's the
I
again,
agree, the kiss was out of pocket.
yeah, kissing is too early. There are petty juvenile arguments. I mean, they will go off on tangents arguing about, you know, diction or something idiotic. That is just, it goes on for pages. And I get to a point where it's like, skip, you know, you just, it really got on my nerves. There are also, and while there is passive aggressiveness going on with the servants, the food BS that goes on in the story about how they will only cook food for Caroline, his servants, Blake's servants, who all would be fired, let's face it, if this were real life. You know, oh, they'll only do food for me, blah, blah, blah. There are a lot of really weird, and one of the things I also hate about Caroline is this, this is true in all of these beyond Bridgerton. Like we get beyond the Smythe Smith series and we get into these character flaws that are almost cartoonishly overdone. The clumsiness and
Oh, sure.
the descriptions of some of these, you know, this person falling over and you know, there was a thing of lace over there. I mean, it's just, I know we're trying to put comedy in here and some of those physical comedy things do not translate well to the page. So it really, it's not as funny or sweet as it comes across to me. So Caroline gets on my nerves, but they are not, they're certainly not the worst couple in this group of four.
Yeah.
And you know, I feel like I don't know what he's getting from her. You know what I mean? I feel like he's offering a
He's
lot.
getting laughter back into his life. He's been so alone. If you're going to defend Amelia and Thomas, I'm defending Caroline and Blake. I think that, again, it's kind of like the spirit of his fiance. And I will say, I think I put in my notes about the story that I didn't mention, but that story of like him and his fiance, the little brief little notes that we find out about that would have made a great story. I wish I read that story of like them being childhood friends. They had a tree house and then they both worked for the War Department or the War Office. And then one day somebody got killed or like, or not killed, but maybe injured or something like that or something. But like it, and he feels guilty over it, and then but they love each other, and they're going to get married and such. So I think that would have been a cuter story. But with the story that we got, I think that just in general, much like Thomas, he's isolated himself, and he only really talks to James and his servants, and maybe that's why his servants won't feed him good food because he's such a downer all the time. But he just generally. He's just constantly doing whatever, and he's trying to get out of the War Office because it's reminding him of the horrible things that happened to his fiance. By the way, his fiance got killed on a mission that he was supposed to go on, but he had like a sore throat or something, and she went instead, and they found her with several gunshots in her, which is very sad. But it was, it's interesting. I'll talk about Blake later, but because he's a great character, but he's such an idiot. I love him. But they, I think that what Caroline brings to the table is, it's been maybe like, what was it, like 5-6 years since his fiance's passing, and Caroline is the first like bright spot that he's seen. Yes, she's clumsy, yes, she talks too much, but he's one of those people who kind of grunts, and that's what he calls talking. Like, he, it's filling his life with a little bit of a challenge and a little bit of laughter and just talkativeness in general that like is making his day brighter comparatively. And it's just, it's a change of pace that he needed and selfishly wanted ever since his fiance died. And I think that's what the role that Caroline kind of fills for him. Even though it can get a little bit overboard with the clumsiness and with like some of their interactions, but I think in general that they just, they challenge each other intellectually, and she makes his world a little bit less bleak. So that's my defense of that, but you can have your own opinion. But my number three is Amelia and Thomas. The one thing I really cannot get past, and I understand it's a pride, not a pride thing, but it's like a duty thing of like just passing her off to Jack when he loses the title at first really pisses me off. And it's just because he's uncertain about his future. And I'm just like, okay, well, so is she. Can you not just pass her off to this random ass dude you've never met before until now? And you know that he's like a highwayman who robbed your grandma. Like, are you kidding? Like, are you okay? Are you ill? Like, yeah, why are you trying to do that to Amelia? You do not know this man other than he's trying to flirt with Grace. Other than that, you do not know him. And especially if he is flirting with Grace, who's to say that he won't make Grace his mistress in some way and just cheat on Amelia constantly? Like, that wouldn't be fair to her, and he clearly doesn't want to marry her. What really comes to mind is that one discussion in front of Amelia with her father in the room and with everybody else in the room, just talking about like, okay, well, you're gonna marry Amelia, and then fighting over who's not gonna marry Amelia. Yeah, like, they really want to not marry her.
Hello. Yeah.
And she's just in the corner like, what the fuck is happening? Like, and she can't really contribute because, again, her father's an awful person. And it's just, it's really sad. And the fact that it even gets to that point where, like, he's constantly saying, oh yeah, well, I'm not going to marry her. You've got to do it. It's the dutiful thing to do for you. It's not my duty anymore, so you do it. And I I'll get into it when I talk about Thomas, but it really pisses me off. But I do like the element of their relationship that is seeing each other for who they are at last. Because, again, he has been avoiding things, and she's been just constantly pestered by her family about, well, this is the most advantageous match. You have to do everything correctly. You have to be prepared for when he is going to eventually marry you, and you have to be ready to be a duchess and blah, 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 blah. And she has just been groomed and bred to just like do exactly what he wants. It's kind of like that one moment in Queen Charlotte when Lady Danbury, when Agatha is just talking about how I was raised to like all the things he liked. It's kind of like that monologue, but a person. And she's just dreading this. And once she starts seeing this behavior and like just getting so upset about how he's just been ignoring her for all this time, she's just like, well, I don't care if he sees me for who I am. I'm not going to fucking dance with you if I don't want to. I'm going to go over here into the garden, even though I have no idea what I'm doing. And that was a really awkward thing for me to do. But I think that him finally seeing her for the intelligent woman that she is, and her having other interests outside of him. I wish they expanded more on her interests, but then again, she wasn't really given much of an opportunity to develop interests outside of him, which is sad to think about, but I think that's probably the point. But Thomas just is such an ungrateful bastard. And I think that
entitled,
that just really
I think
me.
Is the word.
And again, he kisses Grace and thinks about marrying her, but then he's just like, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that, actually. She's not as hot as Amelia. And again, these men are so fucking horny. And then, and again, like, when I was reading Grace and Jack's book and that happened, I was thinking, oh, well, isn't the next book about him and Amelia? Am I supposed to root for them now? Like, what am I supposed to feel right now? Like, that he's kissed another woman just to test things out. Like, that says a lot about him as a person. But I do think that they don't fight enough for each other in a way. And I think that's one of the reasons why I put Caroline and Blake above them, is because he just kind of gives up because he thinks that's what's for the best. But she's just constantly like, hey, what the fuck? Are you not going to, like, after the whole thing where he confirms that the marriage was legal and he's no longer the Duke, he runs off to a pub to get drunk, of course. And Amelia follows him after being like, I'm not going to fucking marry Jack, so bye. And she goes and finds him, and he's just like, well, I'm drunk now. I'm not going to marry. It's like, we're not, like, he doesn't even talk about marrying her. And they're, it's just a very awkward conversation. And again, they don't, I think she fights for him, but he just does not
she fights
care
much
enough about
her. Yeah, she much fights much harder for him.
And I think in general, it would have been more interesting. And it could have been a fun little thing, kind of like Antony, of like, I love this person so much, but my duty to my family or whatever is getting in the way of that. And I wish it was more of an internal struggle for him than just being like, well, I'm losing everything. I'm just going to lose her too, whatever. Like, you can still retain a little bit of your life, even if you don't think it's what she deserves. And that's for her to decide, not you. But I don't know. I think that he doesn't fight for her enough, and it's disappointing.
I think the reason for that is that he's never really thought about things from her perspective at all.
Never. Not once.
Until she makes it.
Yeah. And that makes me hate him more. Anyway, so my number four, big shocker, is Grace and Jack. Very weird meet cute. It's a meet weird. And I really don't like it that he was robbing them, and then she turns her cheek once, like turns to the side once, like after she's been pushed out of the carriage into his arms because the grandmother was going to fetch something, and she was like, use her as a hostage. Like, because again, the grandma fucking sucks. Yeah. And she's just in his arms. She turns her head a little bit, and then he kisses her. It's weird. Like, what was that? Well, I'll talk about that when we talk about sex scenes, because there are some fucking weird ones. And mostly lust, not love. Again, these men are horny as fuck. Like, they just, they will have sex with anything that has legs. So the fact that these women are near them at certain times is very unfortunate for them. Well, actually not unfortunate, but it's very convenient for that, for the men, yeah, who don't have reputations to uphold. And so who cares? Just fuck them, I guess. And then the one good thing I can think of for them is they do work well as a team as Duke and Duchess after the marriage. Like, she reads his stuff because he's illiterate and dyslexic, and he works in person with people, I guess. I don't know. What am I supposed to say? I don't think there are many like good qualities. That's all I wrote down for this couple. I don't know how to describe them any better. Like, they just kind of are fucking, and that's it. It's more of a friends, but not friends with benefits. It's just people having sex. Like, it's not really love at all. I wouldn't say it's the worst couple of like the Bridgerton universe. Like, there are some worse ones.
There are,
but
it's, they're really weird. It's really, I mean, it's really just not good. I don't root for them. I think that this more saving character in this couple is Grace, but at the same time, I don't like either of them. And I find them as a couple implausible. So what I wrote down, totally implausible attraction. Mm-hmm. You don't get anything about either of them that would make you think that they have a reason to be attracted to each other. Kissing is way too early. There's no sense of them as individuals. And I think that that's a really important.
That's really important. Well,
because there's no sense of them as individuals. And I think that that's, you know, the characters that we like are characters that are three-dimensional. These people are not. Because he is highwayman and she is poor, put upon helping girl. I mean, it's stupid. And there's it is just lust throughout. There's and that lust has no basis. Like typically what we will see in these, and I do feel like this book, and it's true in some of the other books too, this book is a pretty standard romance novel of sex, 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 no good reason for the sex. And I feel like what I saw with this, there is just no basis for this. Normally you'll get like, oh, she had this beautiful hair. She had this, her eyes were whatever, or oh,
Yeah,
he had
Amelia
this
has
strong
beautiful
chest.
hazel eyes, just like me. And
Yeah,
so I felt
exactly.
really seen by Amelia.
Yeah.
When I wrote down stuff for Amelia's character, I wrote down hazel eyes. I recently have taken that off the list because they're not as important, but I appreciated the amazing like
Hazel.
descriptions of hazel eyes that
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
usually see in fiction.
That's true. They're a little more green in some lights. Anyway,
And sometimes a little bit more brown. It just kind of
right,
happens.
but you get the sense that these people are physically attracted to each other. I don't even get that with this. There's just a bunch of random sex. Like, what the hell? I don't understand what the attraction is between the two of them. It just is idiotic. All right.
Female characters. Who's your
Yeah.
number one? I wonder who it could be. Is it Elizabeth?
It's Elizabeth.
Same.
However, there are some negatives with her, and of course, I wrote those down like really quickly because I had not made physical notes for this book because I was traveling. But I really felt like there was an idiotic level of clumsiness with her. It's not as we aren't beaten over the head with it the way we are.
Yeah, well, she runs into a lot of end tables.
She does, and especially early on. Early on, it's like, oh, just stop. She's generally great though. But right at the end, when she finds out that he's a Marcus, she creates stupid obstacles like, oh, I don't really know who he is. Like, okay, let's just say that he's a Marquis and he wants to marry you and you love him. Isn't that good enough? Who gives a shit? I mean,
Yeah.
like, unless you do really know who he is because this man saved you. I mean, just what the fuck is wrong with you? I want him to slap the shit out of her for about three chapters. So, yeah, or
That
four.
last cup those last couple chapters were a trudge to get through because they were just constantly fighting and they were saying really cutting things to each other, and I was
Yeah.
just like, y'all, don't you love each other? Calm down.
Well,
And I
but she
mean,
would start it every
she would
time.
always start it, and then he'd be like, okay, well, if we're going that far, and then Blake and Caroline are over there on the couch just watching it like a tennis match, being like, what the fuck is happening?
What is
Like,
wrong?
they're the rational ones. It's just, it's
Yeah, and they're
funny.
not really
Like,
rational.
they didn't go through the same shit before, but they've learned from their experiences. I love it, I will say. I absolutely adore it, and I think it's implemented well almost every single time for Julia Quinn. When there are former couples that have gotten together in other books coming back, like everything is so funny because they've learned from their stupid experiences, especially honestly, the stupider the better. They've learned way more. But like they come back and they're just like the rational ones of the group of just being like, y'all, calm down.
Don't
They're
do
like the
this
reader
shit.
inputs of just like, y'all, shut the fuck up and just kiss. Like, you're a Marquis. She needs to marry somebody with a lot of money. It just kind of fits. Like, I mean, you're not going after him because of money and you know it. So what's the problem?
Well, and he
That he
cares
has
about, he
money?
cares
Oh
about his
no.
siblings. I mean, like, what the f I don't know, whatever. That
Dumb.
those obstacles are idiotic, but I still really like Elizabeth, so she's my number one.
My number one is also Elizabeth. She takes care of her family so well. I do like her family. I like the inclusion of them. She's selfless, she's resourceful, she's intelligent, she's loyal, she's clumsy. She's really proud. And she has a tragic past. Just a little bit about her tragic past. Her mother died in a carriage accident, and her father, who seems to have loved her more than his children, which is
Loved the
not
wife.
the wife more than his children. He killed himself not long after, and Elizabeth took it upon herself to stage it like a hunting accident, and to not let her family see what happened. It's so sad, and she has this moment of vulnerability after she's nearly raped. The near rape is more constant in these books than I ever anticipated they would be, and
Again,
so.
that is a definite romance novel thing. So
It
that's
definitely is, but it was not as rampant in like the
okay.
Bridgerton books, but except for Sophie, poor Sophie. But either way, so yeah, he saves her from that, and she's just kind of like shaking on the ground, and they just talk about their deepest, darkest secrets, and it feels natural. And I really like Elizabeth. I think I like that she is trying to make a better life for her family, but I do think her pride goes a little too far at the end. Okay, and then my number two is Amelia. I fucking love Amelia. She's
I
really
love
cool.
Amelia too. She's my number two also.
She's so patient. Like, dear Lord, I wish I had the patience she had. My God. Like 20-ish years of waiting for this man. Like, and to be fair, you shouldn't marry a 1-year-old. But you know what I mean? Like, once you get to, like, by society standards, she's like 21, 22. And by now, she's essentially on the shelf, which is how society worked back then, which is so awful. I would be on the shelf. Oh no. And
You're not.
I'm not, I'm good. But it just, she's been waiting so long, like ever since she was maybe like 16, 17, for this man to get on his big boy pants and propose and do what both of their families have been expecting him to do. And she's been noticing this huge routine of he will come up, he will kiss her on the hand, they will murmur greetings, they will go for one dance, and then that's it. No getting to know each other, no extra conversation, just polite conversation, that's it. And she's just sick of it. She really wants to take back her agency, and she wants to finally speak her mind, and he's gonna fucking listen. And I like that a lot. I like her taking charge, especially towards the end of the book, where like they're both unattached at this point, like considering the betrothal contract, they're unattached. And she's just like, come on, let's just do it. Like, I love you. Sorry, I love you. I have to go. And then he's just like, wait, you love me? It's just like, what do you think, dumbass? Of course I do. And then they like start having, we'll talk about that in the sex scenes. It was a weird sex scene, but her finally being like, well, it's done, so you might as well continue. And yeah, it just, her taking charge, especially towards the end, like I really like that for her. And I generally, I just like her taking back her agency that was taken away from her at such a young age. So.
Yeah, I love Amelia. I would add, because even like the very first public ball or whatever it is where we see her and Thomas together, and she's like, oh, this is what he's gonna do. And she's kind of like it's a whole evening of eye rolling for her. And she's just kind of like, she starts to verbally eye roll at him. And he's just not used to it. Everybody bows down and scrapes and all this other stuff. He's the Duke, blah, blah, blah. And she really is kind of letting him have it, like, fine, you do whatever you want, see ya, I'm going in the garden. And she is basically acting like, I'm gonna talk to my father about just ending this contract. This is ridiculous. I mean, she really, even from that moment early on, and he does kiss her that night and is kind of shocked, hey, she's a person.
But she
But
also like accuses him, and he's, or like points out, you're just trying to seduce me to shut me up. That's not gonna work, bro. It kind of does work just because she does love him deep down,
well,
but
yeah, and she does have a very hormonal response to him, which surprises her too.
yeah.
But I think the fact that that response is there, for both of them, and it exists for both of them, even like in the idea of like other people, like she's not interested in Jack, he's not really interested in Grace. I think that there is a sense for both of them, like, why have I been letting the societal construct dictate how this actually is going to go? And once they break out of that, it makes all the difference. So I love that, and I love that she's the one who prompts it. So good for her. Go, Amanda.
Who's your number three?
My number three would be Caroline.
Yeah, me too.
And you know, the thing is, I want to like Grace, but she's just not a person.
She's a cardboard cutout.
She's a cardboard cutout of a person. I mean, honestly, like Caroline at least has, you know, she does some shit. She has a personality. She's not nearly as smart as she thinks she is, though. And I find that incredibly annoying about her. So she, what I wrote down about her, and there were things that I've really bothered me about her. She would not shut the fuck up. That bothers me. She's too busy being right or funny or smart. She does not listen. Like, he speaks to her, and she's so busy trying to talk that she does not hear him. The bullshit, and this is one of those things that, again, from a personality perspective, I really don't like it. Like rearranging his shit without permission. Like, I'm gonna rearrange your garden. I'm gonna rearrange your library. I'm gonna rearrange, you know, your bathroom, everything else without asking. I really hate that. That is something to me that is like, bleh. It just was nails on a chalkboard for me.
I agree with that.
And then she's like wondering why he's upset. It's like, oh, he's irrationally angry, but this is like, you didn't ask.
Yeah.
You know, I like agree. It would have been hard to like say, hey, I noticed that there's some, your bushes need tending. Do you mind if I go out there and do this? Or, hey, I'm going to talk to your person about whatever. She is a drama queen. She is a total fucking drama queen. And the crying, she cries all the fucking time. It gets my nerves. So she's not my favorite, clearly. But at least she does some shit, which I can't say is true of Grace. So.
Sure. For Caroline, I said she was strong, smart, resourceful, left-handed. I don't know. Ignores her trauma by not taking things too seriously. She has a tragic backstory of being passed around from bad house all her life. She was nearly raped in the first scene. I love the beginning of the book being she just shot a bitch.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm not going to get raped by you, sir. I'm shooting you in the shoulder. Yeah. And that was funny to me. I liked that. But I do agree that her not asking permission about all of this shit, like, again, it should have been more of a Belle situation where, like, he slowly introduces her to different things in the household and gives her permission to do what she will with it because he doesn't care. He clearly doesn't care, but, like, I think that would have been more appealing and not her just, like, I'm going to rearrange the whole garden. And I do agree that is annoying. But, yeah, I think that she's, I will say one thing about Caroline that I don't love, and you've pointed out, is that she just is a little quirky. And there's a moment where she likes to do an impressions, and I'm just like, I don't know about that, but sure. And I don't know. I think that she can be a little bit annoying, but she definitely doesn't make the book boring. I can't say the same about my number four, which is Grace. I wrote down was Duchess companion, similar to Cecilia's backstory, just kind of there. So I don't know what else to say about Grace. I think she likes atlases, maybe. I don't remember if that's correct for that book, but
it is. Yeah,
okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's all I remember about Grace.
Yeah, so what I wrote down for Grace. No, I'm sorry. Amelia is the one who likes atlases.
You're right. See?
Amelia is cooler.
Grace doesn't have anything.
She likes that. So what
Grace has nothing.
Grace is weak, indecisive, not particularly bright, and there's no visual description of her that would justify the amount of lust that is involved from Jack. So, yeah.
All right, male characters. Who's your number one?
James.
Yeah, I like James a lot.
I just wrote down I really like him. I mean, and there are a lot of reasons for it. He is a very stable guy. He is a smart guy. He has his own tragic backstory, but he's a little like a Marcus in the sense that he, you know, I can wallow in tragic backstory or I can make the best of it. And I'm going to make the best of it. And he is that guy. And I
literally any relation of Lady Danbury's is just going to be like top of the list. Awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, or not top of the list, but at least close to the top of the list. Cause Marcus, Gareth and James, all awesome characters.
Yeah, I'm in favor. I mean, they're all good. So, but these are also relations that she likes as opposed to the one she doesn't.
And there's a reason why.
And there is a reason why, and we agree with her taste because Lady Danbury knows what the fuck she's talking about. So yeah, I really felt like James was the most stable, normal, whatever of the guys in this foursome. Who is your number one? Is James also
James? Yeah. Okay. I like him better in the other book just because I liked him being the rational one for a minute, but he's still good in the other book. He no longer works for the War Office. He's Lady Danbury's nephew. He's smart. He's suave. A bit cocky towards the end about, like, the way he gets it, it's mostly just in response to how Elizabeth is reacting to, you have money? Ugh. And him just being like, yeah, I have fucking money. And you want that, don't you? And like, he gets a little bit cocky towards the end. But again, it's mostly in response to her. But again, you didn't have to go that far. But yeah, he wants to be seen as himself and not as his title. And I appreciate that. And he has a tragic backstory of his mother was abused and killed by his father. It's very sad. Very depressing. And he was raised with like the toxic masculinity mentality of just like, you can't cry, you're a boy or some shit by his father, but he never listened. He always really remembered how his mother would comfort him and how loving she would be. And that's what kind of got him through his childhood. And then he went immediately to Lady Danbury's house and basically lived there for most of his life just to get away from his awful father. So,
yeah. Yeah, he's pretty great. Who's your number two?
Blake. I like him. He's determined. He's serious. He wants to avenge his dead fiance by condemning traitors. Again, in parentheses, I put with a cute and compelling story of childhood friends to lovers to coworkers in the war office. I want to read that book. That sounds fun. I want a little novella. Kind of like a violent novella. He feels dead inside, so he denies his feelings, and he feels like he shouldn't. It's kind of like Francesca, where it's just like, I shouldn't be feeling this for another person. Because again, no matter what the show wants us to believe, she does love John. She did love John. And just because this is a different kind of love, or even if it isn't a different kind of love, you can love multiple people in your lifetime, and it would only be wrong if they were both alive, if I'm being honest. But unless you want polyamory to enter the equation, but I think that's a little complicated for a Bridgerton book. Anyway, but yeah, I think that his backstory is compelling enough for you to understand why he's hesitant to even open himself up to a new relationship. And it is kind of a forced proposal between the two of them, but it's just, and it needed to be, honestly, for this kind of story to work in many ways. But yeah, I really like him. I think he takes his work very seriously. He's very brave. And he really, really does care about Caroline and her safety and the safety of everybody else as well, but mostly her. But again, with the raised stakes of the book, it makes it a lot more compelling for him to be like this cool super agent guy, and I just like him.
Yeah, I really like Blake too. There are some things I don't like about Blake, and I'm going to point those out.
He's stubborn as an ox.
Yeah, but he is my number two also. So what he wrote down, he has kind of an irrational, childish temper. Okay. So does she, but I think he has more of a reason for it than she does. So
yeah.
Whatever. He says some misogynistic shit. Which,
oh yes.
Yeah, I mean that is fairly common in this time period. It creeps up in all these books, whatever. He's also a little bit of a drama king, and it makes them, of course, suitable for each other, but it mm-hmm. does make him less compelling to me as a character. But otherwise, I agree with you. He has like a much more tragic backstory, all of the things. I feel a lot more empathy toward him, and I also respect like how dedicated he is to his country and to Caroline and everything else. One of the problems that I have, and it comes up in their relationship, is that he is so fucking horny for her, like right off the mm-hmm. bat. That
it's unnatural, really.
Have you just like opinion. Not seen any women ever? I mean,
yeah.
Has, so it's kind of like, I'm not really sure why it is this pronounced. But in any case, and that made my assessment of their coupledom a little bit
coupledom.
Yeah, I mean, two of them as a couple are not really well balanced to me. But again, I just like him better than her. So
I was just thinking about it. Caroline's backstory reminds me a lot of the series of unfortunate events.
Yes.
It's very similar, guardian to guardian. It gets worse and worse. Anyway, so yeah, who's your number three?
My number three is gonna be Thomas. I like Thomas a lot. I respect the whole duty thing, whatever. And I like the fact that he grows, like the fact that he goes from being just kind of this, I'm the Duke, to like, hey, I love you. You know, that is an important growth arc for me. So I like that about him.
I will say, mine is also Thomas, but I will also say I wish it was more of a gradual growth where he was showing being a little bit more vulnerable throughout.
Yeah.
Yeah. And letting his guard down a little bit as time went on, rather than just being like, oh, well, now that we've had sex, yes, I can admit I do love you. It's like, okay, man, come on. But yeah, what I wrote down was passive.
Inside her.
Literally. We'll talk about it in a minute.
Yeah,
I wrote down passive because he doesn't really fight for anything. He's just kind of like, well, I guess that's my life now. And then losing his identity, doesn't want to be put on a pedestal, which is interesting considering his behavior. And he doesn't really fight for her, uncertain future, and constantly pushing her away, which again, it's because of his pride and his dignity and his duty and whatever, blah, blah, blah. But come on, man, get a grip. Like, come on, man up. Like, you go after what you want. You were a duke for what, a couple of years? Like, good for you. Like, now you're having a small country life that is probably going to be provided for you by Jack, and you're going to get to live with the person you love most. Great, get over it. Like, I can understand his idea of like, it's not fair to her to be diminished to such a low station after whatever, and I'm just like, dude, ask her. Talk to her about that.
Yeah, exactly.
You will have funds available to you. Jack will not spare any expense for you. I mean, it's, I don't see a reason why you should be so depressed about this. But, and then he ends up being an Earl anyway. So who fucking cares? So it really doesn't matter. He inherits her father's earldom, which is a bit of a random thing for the king, who appears in the epilogue of this book.
Yes.
Which is wild to me. When I read that, I was like, what the fuck is happening? But yeah. Anyway, so yeah, that's my number three is Thomas. My number four is Jack. He's a highwayman. He's rakish. He's Robin Hood. He's a class clown. He blames himself for his cousin's death, which is stupid because he thinks he followed him to war. And I'm like, that was your cousin's decision. He didn't force him to go to any war. He doesn't want to be Duke, and he's randomly illiterate and dyslexic. Like, I don't know what else to say about him. He's a lot like Grace, where it's just like, you are such, he's a horny, horny, horny man. Like, I do not know how he has made it through life without just humping everything he sees like a dog in heat. Like, I don't understand why he is so fucking horny. Like, calm down, take a cold bath and get a grip over yourself, man. Pull yourself together, man. Come on. Sorry.
He's so full of himself too.
He really is. He's so cocky.
I mean, I guess that is a cover for the fact that he's illiterate and whatever, but you know, we don't even find out he's illiterate.
That's until, like, the last chapter we find that out.
It's absurd bullshit. So he's portrayed as kind of this cool, full of himself guy. He's got the tragic backstory is so contrived and so late in the book to like, oh, I'm responsible for my cousin's death. We find out that this is like,
that was in a random paragraph. I was just like, sorry.
Right, he doesn't want to go back to Ireland because, oh, you know, he'd have to see his aunt who raised him and talk about like his cousin's death. Like, and he hasn't even returned. I mean, well, of course, he hasn't returned because he's illiterate, but
also, I'd like to say it's not something like he doesn't talk about his cousin to Grace. He doesn't open up about anything to Grace, his love interest, because Grace is a paper bag. Like, I don't know. She just flies in the wind and just lets anything take her wherever she needs to be. And then he will. I think I heard my roommate go, oh, sorry. But I don't. She just is such a non-person, and he is even less so. He is just horniness incarnate, and he just needs to calm the fuck down. He needs to go away. His dyslexic self, nothing against people with dyslexia. I understand that that's a very hard thing to deal with, but The fact that was shoehorned in at the end, being like, but I can't be the Duke. I'm dyslexic. It's like, shut the fuck up. You're fine. Have your wife read to you.
Gotten by this long. I mean,
I know. How have you gotten by this long? And you found out a system pretty damn quickly. So I don't think that's an issue. And now you have unlimited funds. So maybe you should just calm down.
Yeah,
like, he's such an idiot. Dumb. Like, I can't. All right.
They're done. Sex scenes.
All right. You're number one.
This is hard for me.
Honestly. No, it was not hard for me. I'll tell you why in a second.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
Are you?
I'm pretty sure, but I'm going with How to Marry a Marquis.
I also am going with How to Marry a Marquis.
Well, because I really, really love that they have built up to this.
Yes.
Like, you know, that, and you know, normally it's like, oh my God, there aren't enough, which I would say was true for Marcus and
Honoria.
I also would say that that is true for the ones in the Bevelstokes.
Oh,
blonde girl and oh my God, I'm like losing.
Fuck. Oh no, no, we're reading so many at once.
I know. But
let me look. I'll look.
Anyway, so this. It was
Olivia and Henry.
Olivia and Henry.
They needed so many more. They deserved so much more. Sorry, go ahead.
They did. And I feel like Elizabeth and James do too.
Yes.
And I feel like, because what they get in all of the preliminary is all very, very good. And I love that they stop when it's like, no, we can't, you know, like, no, I'm not going to take your virtue kind of things. Or no, like, I'm not going to, you know, give you my virtue because, you know, whatever. And the fact that they wait until they are committed, I think is really, really great. I think the sex that they have is great. So I'm giving them
number the one. Reason I put How to Marry Marquis at number one is because the first kiss is not rushed. And that is not true for a majority of these.
Yes.
I think that there isn't a weird scene. Well, okay, there are a few makeout scenes that are a little bit odd, like this is a proof of feelings kiss, mwah! And it's just like, okay. they have a good first kiss, interrupted makeout scenes galore, but that's true in a lot of these books anyway. But there are some sweet kisses promising they'll be together. Good somewhat first time in the forest. That's a new location we've unlocked. And I mean, we've got a lot of hunting lodges in the woods during a rainstorm, but now we have unlocked the woods.
Well, Amelia and Thomas have the woods.
Oh, we'll talk about the gazebo in a minute. But and then they have the full sex scene at the end in the hunting lodge again. Yeah, another fucking hunting lodge.
Although this was like a setup by Lady Danbury.
Yeah, but it's still a fucking hunting lodge. And it's raining, I think. It's about to rain or something.
No, it ends up raining because
Lady Danbury. I knew it. Every single time someone is near a hunting lodge, it starts to fucking rain. Yeah. Anyway, that's just the truth of these movies. Like, if you're near a hunting lodge, don't be ready for rain. Or to have sex. Or to be wet in general. You will be wet regardless.
Anyway. I don't want to have that discussion with you.
Is To Catch an Heiress for me, because there's a really weird and random first kiss that I do not like. There's a nice second kiss. He tried to start something, but she stops him and is just like, hey, I don't think this is a good idea. Because I think it was after he like told her a little bit about his dead fiance. And I was just like, yeah, I know that now's not the time. Like, they then start something to get interrupted. There's a somewhat sex scene when he's drunk and he says he won't marry her afterwards, which isn't great. Then there's finally a sex scene on the beach. We've unlocked the beach now. A lot of outdoor locations. They like it alfresco.
This is a game. Oh my God.
They like to have sex al fresco. Anyway, there's finally a sex scene on the beach where he realizes he loves her, but he's not going to tell her yet because he's weird. And then there's a realization of feelings kiss and a little chase things of like, oh yeah, well, you're gonna have to fucking catch me and you need to promise me a couple of kisses along the way. And he's just like eight, and she's just, or like five, and I'm just like, well, maybe six, seven, eight, and they just run off into the sunset and it's cute. So
Yeah, I also put To Catch an Heiress. My notes were they were overall good in good quantity, just somewhat out of the blue early
Yeah,
on.
a little bit out of the
Big
blue.
thing. The ending thing is cute, so yeah. Okay.
Yeah. What's your number three?
My number three is Mr. Cavendish, I presume.
I agree.
And what I wrote down for that is that they are good, but the one where he rejects her because she is initiating in one of the
Yes.
bef
She
and he
pounces.
he right, and he is like responding and he's all into it and then he like pushes her away.
Oh, it's so
It
annoying.
is so awful and sad. I mean, it's totally plausible,
Oh,
obviously.
absolutely, but my
Totally
God.
plausible, but she, you know, how she just has the resilience to keep like
Trying,
trying is
living,
them. Yeah,
existing after
surviving.
that, Jesus.
Exactly. I mean, I'd be like, you know, but of course
I'd want to crawl into a hole.
she's also in a very weird circumstance though. Like she's on this trip and like her dad's there. It's weird, you know, her she's got like creepy cousin Jack and Grace and blah blah blah. There's so many weird things. But so who else does she have to be with other than Thomas? And then so she's kind of like, okay, let's see if this is gonna work. And their final sex scene, I felt like there was too much talking. Just way too much final
So
sex.
yeah, I put cute first kiss after dancing in the garden, perspective changing makeout scene, which is good. There's the carriage kiss thing, which is
Yeah.
kind of out of the blue, but it doesn't lead to much, which is disappointing, but whatever. And then there's a makeout scene similar to Sarah and Hugh, like again, al fresco. And he am I using that term correctly?
Al fresco, yeah, means outside.
Good for me. New vocabulary unlocked. Anyway, but
Is
it's the
happening?
makeout scene is similar to Sarah and Hugh, but way less satisfying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they're on the ground and she's like she literally pounced on him. Literally. She like jumped. And she's like like you said, initiating. It's very hot and heavy. And then he just is like, but wait. I can't. It's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? This woman is literally throwing herself at you. This beautiful woman who you actually love, and you're saying no because, like,
I
I mean,
mean,
not to say that you can't be not in the mood, but he is fucking in the mood because all these men are. Like, I don't know
he's totally
why
in the mood.
that was such an issue
Okay,
for him. It was
the reason.
before he found out that he was he, before the night before they were going to find out whether or not he was going to be the heir. Or like not the heir, the Duke, and then and so he doesn't want to like make her commit to something, I suppose, but it still is heartbreaking for her. And then there's finally a sex scene, but he questions it in the middle, and then she's just like, "Well, you've started it, now make it good." And I love
Well,
that line.
what she also says is like, I am never going to regret this.
Yeah, so
Never.
you need to get
Get
going
on with
because. Yeah, get on
it.
with it. Literally, it's just all I was thinking about. It's just that Monty Python part. All right, number four is The Lost Duke of Wyndham. Weird first kiss. Very weird. Very, very weird. Probably the weirdest first kiss, in my opinion, because it was
It might
way
be
too
the weirdest.
early.
This may be the weirdest first kiss in all of the Julia Quinn so far.
Anne and Daniel are weird.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think this still might be weirder.
Yeah, it's less time, honestly. Because at least he watched her play piano for a while.
Yeah.
Anyway, then there's a random makeout scene, another random interrupted makeout scene, another interrupted makeout scene, and finally a sex scene at the inn or whatever, and then random kiss in family home. But he's like, I really don't want to do it in my aunt's house. And it's just like, okay, good for you. At least you have some standards, you horny bastard. Like, I don't know.
This is what I wrote down. There are lots of sex scenes, but they are not interesting because they are implausible.
And they're like, and she's like a sex doll to him,
Yeah,
essentially.
basically.
Because she has no personality outside of the fact that she is there. She really has no
Yeah.
personality at all. You know what? I think
Sad.
she's probably the most milk toasty of all of the heroines we've talked about.
She may be.
Like, Miranda was boring, but at least she had a hobby. Like, at least she kept a diary. Like, this woman does nothing. And I got the Atlas thing wrong. Like, what does she do? Like, no, she likes that one salon, that one little drawing room in the yeah, house. Like, but other than that, she has no other interests.
Well, and here's the thing that I really, she is such an appeaser. She mm-hmm. is the mediator. She is the, oh, well, maybe. And she doesn't outright reject Thomas when Thomas tries to kiss her and says, maybe you and I should get married. You know, like, hey, with our circumstances are changing, maybe you and I should get married. And she doesn't even reject him, even though she knows she's in love with Jack. It's like, there's so much indecision and stupidity with her. I just can't.
I honestly wonder what it would have been like. And I considered this when I was reading the first book. I was considering, what if the couples were switched and like Grace ended up with Thomas and they've known each other for a while, and he's now that his position is changing, he starts seeing her in a different light, and Amelia gets passed off to Jack, and they get to know each other fresh off for the first time, and they decide that they love each other. Like, that would have been an interesting thought, but it's just, Grace is so boring. Like, she would have been boring in any relationship, so... She's boring in every relationship she is in. Yep. Even a love triangle that is really weird.
Yes, indeed. So anyway, that is those two series of, well, duos of books. Mm-hmm. And at some point we may put all of these things together.
We have the Linden sisters duology and the Blyden trilogy to read next. Yeah. So, and that will be the end of our Julia Quinn, because the other ones were authored by Julia Quinn, like the other ones that she's written were written with two other authors, and we're kind of just purists in a way of mm-hmm. like, maybe they're good, but we're gonna, unless we change our minds, we're gonna just stick with the ones Julia Quinn wrote. And yeah. It also makes it easier to compare, since they were by the same author and all of that stuff, and we know what she's capable of on her own. So
honestly, we have so much material to cover at this point. It's kind of crazy, because, you know, from a book perspective, yeah, we have that, but we also have last season Peaky Blinders, the last season of Umbrella Academy. We have made promises regarding Agatha Christie movies. Mm-hmm. We have a lot to do. It's going to be remarkable if we can get all of this done, you know, anytime soon. So we are looking forward to returning to Peaky Blinders. This is going to be season 6. The one we don't remember. Is there a reason? We don't know. But we know that we are going to share it with you. We hope that you join us. And
cheers.